You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Support for today's show comes from Google Play. Did you know that you can now download and listen to audiobooks on Google Play? That's right, with hands-free listening using Google Assistant or Chromecast, you can enjoy thousands of titles a la carte, no subscription necessary. There's even multi-device integration across the Google ecosystem. And for a limited time, you get $10 off your first one by visiting g.co/play/kick. That's g.co/play/kick. Find your story with audiobooks on Google Play. And now, enjoy the show. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis. Welcome to Kick-Ass News. With sardonic wit and incisive social critiques, David Sedaris has become one of America's preeminent humor writers. The great skill with which he slices through cultural euphemisms and political correctness shows that Sedaris is a master of satire and one of the most observant writers addressing the human condition today. He's a regular contributor to The New Yorker and BBC Radio 4, and there are over 10 million copies of his best-selling books in print, having been translated into 25 languages. In 2001, David Sedaris became the third recipient of the Thurber Prize for American Humor and was named Time Magazine's Humorist of the Year. And now, in his most deeply personal and darkly hilarious book yet, Sedaris sets his formidable powers of observation toward middle age and mortality. The book is called Calypso, and today this lovable misanthrope joins me on the podcast to talk about why he doesn't do social media, how a Fitbit has come to rule his life, and why his hometown of West Sussex named a garbage truck after him. He discusses his love-hate relationship with the term humorist and his affection for the humorous writings of Edna Ferber and Calvin Trilling. David also shares how watching his father grow old has made him think a lot more about his own mortality, his secret for preventing politics from coming between him and his Trump-supporting dad, and why in the Sedaris family, humor is the tie that binds. He opens up about his late mom's struggles with alcoholism, his own boredom at cocktail parties, and the British obsession with bullying Americans into drinking. David also says his heavy travel schedule has liberated him from watching news, and he's a lot happier for it. He wishes he could have a real conversation with a hotel desk clerk or a bellman. Plus, he shares a few of his favorite travel tips and regional insults from around the globe. Coming up with David Sedaris in just a moment. David Sedaris is one of America's preeminent humor writers, even though he lives in England, and he's the recipient of the Thurber Prize for American Humor and a Grammy for Best Spoken Word Album. He's a popular speaker to sold-out audiences around the world, a regular contributor to The New Yorker and BBC Radio 4, and a number one best-selling author of a dozen books, including his latest, Calypso. David Sedaris, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me. I never won a Grammy. I was just nominated.
Oh, okay. I thought that it said that you won one and were nominated for two.
I was nominated a couple of times, but no, I never got it. But then they said to me, you were nominated a few times, so now you can vote. They said 1 year.
Oh, yeah.
They said, here are the nominees. Get your winner in by tomorrow at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then I realized none of those people listen to the nominees. It's just a popularity contest. So after that, I learned that. It didn't even really mean that much to be nominated.
Well, I'm so glad to finally have you as a guest because I don't really run into many bona fide humorists these days. I think it's right up there with newsies and phrenologists among professions that largely died out with the Taft administration. What is the career path to becoming a beloved humorist?
Gosh, I used to not like that title. I rejected it. But then I thought, oh, there are people who have cardigans with patches on the elbows. But now I have cardigans with patches on the elbows. So I just aged into it,
oh, okay.
I think.
You're part of a grand tradition, Mark Twain and whatnot.
Well, it's interesting. There is a tradition in America, where in other countries they don't necessarily have a tradition. When my books come out in France, they're like, what is this? Why would you? He wrote about the dentist. Why would you do that? Whereas in America, there's more of a tradition, and I think there's more of a home for that. With the New Yorker, there's more of a home. And you can be young, and you can read the New Yorker, and you can think, okay, well, that'll be me one day. And then, too, I think there are, I don't know if you call them tropes or whatever, that don't really change that much, mm-hmm.
It makes me wonder, what would the path be for an aspiring humorist today? I'm trying to think, maybe Twitter?
I wouldn't know either. I've never seen Twitter.
Well, yeah,
you don't
have a personal Twitter account, right?
No.
Why, you just don't want to give it away for free or what?
I don't know. It doesn't captivate me in any way. But I think partly because I've never seen it. So
okay.
I'm not thinking, let me in there. Let me. But I've never.
I could show you right now.
I have a Facebook page, but I've never looked at that. I've never seen.
Okay.
But anybody's Facebook page.
Your publicist must love you.
Yeah, I know it.
Well, I absolutely loved your latest offering, Calypso. Parts of it are just laugh out loud funny. But you also talk about aging and death. There's a lot of your family in here. And in particular, you talk about your sister Tiffany's suicide, your mom's alcoholism, watching your dad grow old. Would you say that this is your most personal book yet?
I just write about my life, and I don't do things to write about them, but I guess, just since the last book came out, like you said, my sister committed suicide and my dad is really old, 95 is really old. And if your dad is really old, then you must be old too.
I wonder, is it weird when you're on a tour like this and you're giving interviews and meeting fans at book signings, total strangers, and they come up to you out of the blue, suddenly asking you about personal family tragedies and stuff?
I mean, I feel like, I just give the illusion of exposing myself.
Okay.
Right? I don't feel like I've ever given away anything important, right? Anything that makes me feel vulnerable, that people know that. I mean, there's plenty of that in my diary. It's the reason why I don't hand my diary over to anybody. But sometimes when people... There's a Q&A at the book signing, and people will, when you're on a book tour, and a lot of the questions are questions you'd ask your cousin, what's your dad up to, and how's your sister?
Yeah,
but
there's a pseudo familiarity that must be interesting.
But I figure you get the questions you deserve.
Yeah. I mean, certainly you put it out there, so I'm sure that you steel yourself for that sort of thing.
So it just feels a bit uneven when I meet people. Because they know things about me. So that's why, if I'm in a book signing or whatever, I just flip it around and we talk about them.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also come from a very funny family. Is humor something that your siblings and you use to cope with difficult times?
I think it was just what we used to get my mom's attention.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all have our little specialty, the thing that we do. But we don't... my brother, he can imitate, he's really good at imitating people and he can spot your pretension and just go right for it.
Yeah.
My sister Tiffany, she was also good at making fun of you to your face, but she was a little bit too sharp. Amy can make fun of you to your face and then make you see yourself and laugh at yourself.
Yeah.
I'm not I don't know really say that is my thing. Is making. I'm more like I'd make fun of you behind your back. You know, it's more what I would do.
Good guy. Well, you know, my impression is that there aren't very many sacred cows among your family, and pretty much nothing is off limits. Is that about right?
No, there's plenty that's off limits.
Oh, really?
I mean, everybody has things they don't want people to know.
Yeah.
And even my sister, who committed suicide. I mean, there was a lot that we would have made for really enriched an essay, but I knew she didn't want anybody knowing, and I just would have felt wrong to include it. And then everybody's got their, you know, I disclosed the story with the New Yorker, and they said, "Oh, can you kind of get to the story quicker? Can we redo the first? Can you redo the first couple paragraphs, right?" Which involved my older sister Lisa. And Lisa had no problem with the essay as it was. And so I said, okay, what if I just say blank? And she said, I don't really want people knowing that. And it was something never occurred to me. I mean, she didn't have any problem with people knowing that she goes to the Starbucks in her pajamas and pees in her pants sometimes. She didn't have any problem with that. But she did have a problem with something that to me seemed like information, general information. So I don't want to make her uncomfortable, or I don't want to expose things that she doesn't want people knowing.
So when you write about family, you usually let them read it before it goes to print?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, because they're going to, like with the New Yorker, the fact checkers are going to call them anyway. But the fact checker doesn't But they don't give you the article.
Yeah.
Right? They're going to come and they're going to call you and they're going to say, do you own a pink checked linen shirt? Do you own a red pocket square? And you'll think, oh my God, what is this guy doing? What is he? But they're not going to give you the story.
Yeah.
And so people freak out because somebody can be a minor character in an essay, but tend to think the entire thing is about them.
Yeah, the very idea of a fact checker almost seems like an archaic job as well these days, I suppose.
Well, it's about lawsuits.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But I mean in the context of the Trump administration and whatnot.
Right.
So hard to imagine.
Right. But you have to, if you're writing a comic essay about something that happened in the third grade, you know, then everything has to be exact and true. But if it's
a
policy decision that's going to affect millions of people, then...
Yeah.
Say what you want.
Well, much of the action in Calypso takes place either at your home with your boyfriend Hugh in West Sussex, England, or at this beach house in North Carolina that you purchased as a family retreat. Now, families always come up with the kind of these cutesy poo names for the vacation homes. What name did you give yours?
Well, we used to vacation here as children. And back then, the houses all had beachy names like Crabba-Dabba-Doo and Clam-a-Lot and Dunar Thing. And so now, like there's a house now, they're called God's Place, you know, and Dolphin Song. And our house had a dumb name, and so we changed it to the C-section. And then we just bought the house next to our house, we're going to change that to either the Amniotic Shack or Canker Shores.
Now, was this over your dad's objections?
Well, we bought the place next door because what happens is people buy places, these older houses, tear them down, and build these McMansions that they call sandcastles.
Right.
And they put in pools. And if you have a pool next to you, then all you hear is Marco Polo, Marco Polo, Marco.
Those are just the two worst words ever invented in the English language, I think.
And you just hear it.
I rue the day.
All day, and then at night, adults get into the pool and get drunk.
Yeah. There's a lot of your dad in this book in ways that would probably seem familiar to many sons and daughters listening. Tell us a little about Lou Sedaris.
You know, my boyfriend Hugh, his dad was a novelist. And Hugh's siblings are all artistic in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Like really talented painters. And you have to snoop to look at their work. They don't let anybody see it. And it's almost like their dad got the ambition for everybody in the family. There's no ambition left over for anybody else. And I feel that way with, like, confidence in my family. or self-esteem in my family. Like my dad would never doubt a decision. You know, like with Donald Trump.
Okay.
You could write whatever you want about Donald Trump, but he doesn't care. Like he would never say, I was wrong.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, you caught me out. I shouldn't have done that. Feels completely confident in everything he's ever done or said.
Okay. So
and
no
my dad's
self-doubt.
Like that. No, no self-doubt. And it's interesting to me. It's fascinating to kind of grow up with a person like that. But at the same time, and I don't say this in a poor me way because I would not have changed anything for myself. But I met a woman not long ago and she said her father used to say to her, your mother is my right hand. My business is my left. You're nothing to me. You're zero. And my dad would say, everything you touch turns to crap. And you know what you are? A big, fat nothing. I mean, if I had a dollar for every time I heard that, well, I do. A dollar for every time I heard it. But it was good for me because for me, I thought, well, like, I'll show you.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you never can show them because they'll never concede. You know, I remember when I called my dad. And I said, I'm number one on the New York Times bestseller list. He said, well, you're not number one on the Wall Street Journal list. So you're never you're never going to get that.
And yet it's funny because he seems weirdly optimistic about so many other things. In fact, his favorite expression for just about everything is fantastic, you say.
Fantastic.
Is it just that he's starting to see the world through rose-colored glasses in his old age, or do you think that he's stumbled onto the secret of life?
Well, it's interesting. He, you know, he kind of plays this character named Lou.
Yeah.
And the neighbors, the new neighbors, because all the other ones died, so younger people move in and they know Lou. And Lou is the 95-year-old with, you know, can-do spirit. And they never knew my father.
Mm-hmm.
But I admire him for reinventing himself so late in the game.
Yeah.
He's done a great job at it.
Yeah. And I think you say that your mom kind of reinvented herself in the other direction later in life. You've talked before about her struggles with alcoholism. It's interesting because it didn't start until later when you guys were out of the house.
She always drank, but then she kept, you know, she would have a quota, right? Mm-hmm. But then the quota, you know, kept getting upped and upped and upped and upped and up. And then, you know, the last years of her life weren't very, I don't know. I don't think you can drink like that and be a happy person.
Yeah.
You know, that's what was troubling to me, is that she was unhappy.
Yeah.
And it's not anything I'd ever written about before, but I thought, I don't know that I had the proper, I don't know, depth of understanding or something to write about it.
Mm-hmm.
I had to get an distance away from it. I had to be the age that she was when she died, or I had to, you know, have gone through that myself and come out the other end of it.
Yeah, I know that you don't drink. Is that the reason why?
Oh, I don't. I quit drinking 20 years ago.
Yeah, you express a certain discomfort about cocktail parties, but it must be even harder to be sober in a drinking culture like England.
Well, you know, in the United States, if people are drinking and you say, none for me, thanks, it's generally the end of the discussion. But in England, it's like, what do you mean? Why aren't you going to have a drink? Why don't you have one drink? I don't trust people who don't drink.
Yeah.
And that I can't tell you how often I hear that.
Really?
And I want to say, like, so I'm going to wreck 20 years of sobriety. So someone I'm never going to see again, someone I never want to see again, will trust me? It's just, I don't know. It's funny. And I don't mean to be like a judgmental. I mean, I am a judgmental person, but I don't mean to be a prudish. But I don't think they use the word alcoholic enough there.
Yeah.
But it can be, you know, we'll see women who are just getting off work and they have women, you know, business suits on, falling out off of a bus, you know. Hugh and I always say, oh, I saw Penelope Staggerton on my way home tonight. That's what we always name the horribly drunk woman. But, you know, but people say, oh, well, we need to, you know, we work hard and we deserve to blow off steam. And it's like, you don't work that hard. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there are other ways to blow it off.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more with David Sedaris when we come back in just a moment. How do you stay up to date with the latest business news? If you're still relying on traditional news outlets, keeping up with the news feels like a chore, but it doesn't have to be that way. Business news can be enjoyable, even something you actually look forward to. How? It's called Morning Brew, and it's a free daily email newsletter that delivers the latest business news directly to your inbox every weekday morning. The writers at Morning Brew curate the top business stories that you should know about and deliver them in a conversational and witty tone. Best of all, it's just a quick 5-minute read. Seriously, imagine getting all the information you need to start your day in just 5 minutes and enjoying every second of it. I know how overwhelming it can be when you've got so much news coming at you every day, and that's why I subscribe to Morning Brew for my business news. I love that it's concise, easy to read, and even entertaining, a great, fast way to get the most essential business news before I head into the office. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for free at morningbrew.com/kick. That's morningbrew.com/kick to start getting your daily dose of business news. And now, back to the show. Now, you mentioned that your dad's a Trump supporter. Do you guys still get into politics with each other, or do you largely avoid that subject now?
He's so old, you know, that anytime you talk to him, it could be the last time you talk to him. And I don't want the last time I talk to him to be ugly.
Yeah.
But I have to say, and it's probably a lot of people feel this way, I find it hard to respect somebody. I'm sorry to say it. I mean, I know you're supposed to look at other people's side and you're supposed to. But I find it hard to respect somebody who, you know, if you went at my dad now and you said, okay, how's it going now? He'd say, fantastic, right? Because all that matters is he saved $23 on his taxes.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Whatever else happens, he saved $23, and that's enough for him.
Yeah. Well, it's a different era. It's so hard to respect people when so much of their political belief is steeped in conspiracy theory and just outright lies. Our differences are not what they used to be 20 years ago.
No, they're not. Well, I think that part of it is, you know, like there's somebody who, you know, who I have in my life who believes everything, you know, who believes, you know, that Hillary Clinton was a member of the Illuminati and that Queen Elizabeth had Prince killed on her birthday.
The singer.
Yeah, I guess because his name was Prince. I don't know.
Okay.
But when you try to argue, this person says, "Well, you believe what you read in the New York Times," and it's like, I don't. And so when I try to argue and I say, "Well, I don't know. I know people who write for the New York Times, and I know how much trouble they get in if." But the people that I know who write for the New York Times, if they just made something up like that, they would lose their jobs and it would be really public and humiliating.
Yeah.
There are actual faces attached and they went to college and they studied ethics was part of their training. And you're just looking at something online and there's not even a name attached to it.
Yeah, anonymous bloggers. Yeah. I've had this conversation so many times.
You know, well, I think what troubles me about it is, you know, this person was telling me there was a race of people in North America that were 10 feet tall and they possessed superhuman strength. And I said, wow, that's something. I said, where are their skeletons? Government has them.
Okay.
And that's...
I mean, it sounds like the Aryan race.
Well, the problem...
I
mean, the idea that you would have that... little faith in the government, you know, that you would think.
Yeah.
And I said, why would the government not want you to know about this amazing race of people who live on, what does it benefit them to keep it a secret?
Mm-hmm.
But it's a pretty dark worldview, you know? I mean, if you believe that the government was behind 9/11 and that Sandy Hook was fake, the government faked that. I mean, that's a lot of people keeping a secret.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, it's damn near impossible to keep a secret between more than two people.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's just sad to think of these people who are, instead of doing other things and enjoying their life, are just chasing down these rabbit holes like that.
But there's a community online that is willing to embrace you. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to go there, they're willing to embrace you, and they make you feel at home. And I think for a lot of these people, it's the first time they've ever been embraced, and they're made to feel, you know, like they're one of the few who have clear eyes and can see what's really going on. And they're it's intoxicating. Because generally speaking, I think a lot of them, you know, didn't probably go to college and barely made it out of high school. And now they feel really smart for the first time in their lives.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the basketball player who says that the world is flat and there's no arguing with him. When you say, well, what about those photos? Well, it's all fake. It's all fake. It's all fake. And what about, why hasn't someone found the end of the world? Well, they have, you know, but they're not allowed to talk about it.
At one point, you have one of these arguments with your dad, I think about Trump, and the next morning he comes down to breakfast and asks if you're still talking to him. It's kind of a sweet moment in a weird way, because it just highlights how volatile things are right now and how ugly it's gotten. Something as stupid as politics ruining families and friendships.
Yeah, but it's happening all over the country. You know, it really is. One thing about my dad is that my dad doesn't hold on to things.
Yeah.
You know, you have an argument with him, and after the argument's over, he's ready to forget it and move on. I'm not like that. And it's something, a quality that he has that I've always admired.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, when he said, are you still talking to me? And I said, of course I am. And he said, horse's ass.
Now, on the flip side of that, I think you tell a story about a friend of yours who's actually on the same side with you politically, and you made some kind of a joke about Trump or something, or forwarded a meme, and she immediately shut you out completely.
Well, she thought that she wrote me some anti-Trump thing, and I wrote her back, and I said, I acted as if I were a Trump supporter. And then I wrote her back to say, just kidding, and the email bounced back.
God.
And I thought, oh, my goodness. Well, what was interesting, the insulting thing was that she thought that, I mean, I've known her forever.
That's scary.
That I was a Trump supporter.
Yeah. But it's so scary that we're ending relationships so quickly over something like politics.
Yeah, but then again, you can look at, you know, like yesterday, you know, Justice Kennedy announcing his resignation, right, which would mean that Trump gets to appoint somebody else to the Supreme Court. And that's something bigger than whatever bullshit he's tweeting about some celebrity tomorrow. I mean, that's something that can affect us way into the future.
For sure. In fact, I think in the book you listed 8 or 9 reasons why you've been depressed lately, and just about everyone has to do with politics.
You know, it's interesting because I've been on this book tour for so long, and it means you don't have any time at all.
Right.
And for the first time, probably since my last book came out, I've fallen out of the news, right? I mean, you don't want to be an ignorant person, but I've just sort of taking my finger off that pulse a little bit. And I have to say, there's something about it that feels good. It's so exhausting to care.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for someone on the West Coast, I have to say it's stressful that the first thing I do every morning is just go on my phone to see what's happened in the past few hours that I wasn't aware of.
I was at a hotel in Milwaukee, and it was Obama was president. And I was sitting in the breakfast room, and they had a TV in the breakfast room. And the TV came on, and there was a couple next to me, and they said, oh, Lord, what has he done this time? And I remember thinking, like, what did he ever, like, what do you mean, what did he do this time? What did he ever do? And then this time, it was a couple, same age, sitting next to him. Trump came on TV, and they said the same thing. What has he done this time? Like, when people felt like Obama was taking their country away, I guess I just didn't understand it. I thought, like, gosh, what did he do? But I guess that's how my dad would feel. Like, we're making something out of nothing.
Yeah, I suppose so.
So his wife wore a you know, a hoodie onto a plane, you know, big deal. Why are you making such a big deal out of that?
And there is a point to that. I mean, there's the stuff that matters, and then there's so much other bullshit.
Right.
Whether it's the jacket or, you know, Melania's Christmas decorations, you know, that just distracts from the things that really matter. It's almost like information overload. And I get why you wanted to walk away from it for a little while.
Well, I don't have a television, and I can't remember the last time I turned a television on in a hotel room. I can't remember last time I did it.
And you're in a lot of hotel rooms.
Yeah. But you don't have to turn your own TV on. There are TVs everywhere you go, and you go to the airport and you go, and there's so many of those cable channels, and it's, and they need content. And so, you know, it's true. They take something that deserves 5 minutes of thought, and they chew on it all day and bring in all these experts, and they like to get people riled up. I mean, I remember I went on a show, very first TV show I ever went on, and it was just before Beryl Fever came out. And this woman, she had a show on CNN, I think, and it was me and like two other guys, and then there was a third fellow who was a lot older than us that had written a book about, I don't know, written a book about success or something like that, right? And the host of the show said, "I want you to go after him. You know, I want you to really go after him."
Huh.
And I thought, well, why? I didn't get a chance to read the guy's book. I don't know anything about it. And then one of the guys on the show just tore into this person, really knowing he hadn't read the book either. He was the one you'd have back on because he was vibrant and he was...
It's the theater of it all.
Yeah. But I remember a segment, and I guess because it aired over and over again and it was on YouTube, of somebody on CNN interviewing Joan Rivers, right? And she had a new book out. And the person was talking to Joan Rivers, "Oh, you're just being mean, and aren't you this? And you're wearing a fur coat on the cover of your..." And Joan Rivers just saying, "You know, I'm not doing this." You know, just took and walked away. "I'm not doing this. Like, I'm not... I wrote a funny book, and I'm here to talk about a funny book, and you're not asking the questions. You know, you're trying to make this interview." I mean, and you could argue on the other hand, and you could say, well, Joan Rivers does say mean things, and she said this and that, and why can't the interview be about that? But it didn't make for a good interview. It just made for a, you know, one angry person, and the goal is to have two angry people on television. I mean, I got to say, in that case, I didn't think that was the right person to talk to Joan Rivers. I mean, that's not... It wasn't illuminating. It wasn't. Joan Rivers wasn't presenting a side of herself that we'd never seen before. It was about the interviewer. It wasn't about Joan Rivers at all.
Yeah. Well, I know that all of this has led you to focus on your health a little bit more, you say. In fact, apparently you bought a Fitbit, and it sounds like it's sort of ruling your life nowadays. How many steps are you getting in on a good day?
When I'm at home, I walk between 18 and 22 miles a day. I'm on a book tour, so last night I got back, was it 3 o'clock in the morning? And then I got up at 5 o'clock this morning so I could get my steps in before I headed to the airport because I knew that I was not going to have any time once I got here.
Yeah, so it's kind of a nag, isn't she?
Well, somebody could say, "Well, you know, sorry, busy day, couldn't get it done, but I can't."
Yeah.
I don't know. I just can't seem to do that. And again, it's not choice doesn't really have anything to do with it. Yeah. It just feeds into my mental illness, into whatever existing mental illness I have. It feeds right into it perfectly. It's not pleasant. It's a compulsion.
So you don't enjoy it? It sounds like you do. It sounds like you're, as the Brits would call, you're a fan of rambling.
Well, no, ramblers really are in the countryside with sticks.
Oh, okay.
I'm by the side of the road picking up trash.
Okay. In fact, you're so famous for that didn't they name a garbage truck after you?
Yeah. My local council named a garbage truck after me. And
then David Sedaris, do they even call it a garbage truck in the UK? I'm trying
to think. Do they call it? Like a
rubbish lorry?
Something like that.
Yeah.
And then the local newspaper did an article, you know, local guy picks up trash, gets garbage truck named after him. Then apparently that got picked up somewhere and they wrote and they said, "Don't you know who that is?" And so they rewrote the article, but I didn't understand why they rewrote it because it didn't matter. It didn't matter that I've written some books or that I'm on the radio there. The important thing was that I picked up trash and they named a garbage truck after me.
Now, you spend a good chunk of your year on tour, doing book signings and speaking events and living out of hotels for, what, weeks, maybe even a month or two at a time?
Usually every spring and every fall, I go on a lecture tour. And so it's usually about 42 cities in 44 days.
Wow.
And then this year, you know, then I have a book tour on top of it. So, and you know, an American book tour is a month, and then I leave here and I go to my British book tour, and that's a month, and then I'll go to Italy and Germany and Switzerland, and gosh, Singapore,
wow,
and Australia.
Slow down. Do you have any good travel secrets or tips?
You know, I mean, I always travel with like these folding hangers because sometimes you're in a crummy hotel and they
really?
Just have those hangers that,
yeah.
you know, that
that don't have a hook.
Right.
Or like not a normal hanger. Right. Yeah.
Well, also I got these things
exactly.
in Tokyo
so
called
frustrating.
Shangers. And so I can take shanger. Those that don't have a real hook and attach them to a shanger.
Really? Oh, that's great. That's a great idea.
I wear these hand row T-shirts and underpants. But if you wash them in the sink, and you can wash them with shampoo, you don't need detergent or anything, they'll be dry in like 5 or 6 hours.
Okay.
So I travel with that, and then I need my, you know, I need to be able to hang them up to dry. Gosh, there was something I noticed in a hotel a while ago, and I thought, I should go down and tell them this, because, and then I thought, well, it's probably just me, you know? Just me who, you know, feels that he needs to be doing this in a hotel room. But generally speaking, I mean, that's the thing when you go on tour. Sometimes you're in a city that doesn't have a nice hotel, you know. And I remember watching, you know, when I was in high school or something, and somebody would, a comedian would be on TV and they're going to say, oh, I'm going to be in Sioux Falls, and I'm going to be in Grand Rapids, and I'm going to be in Wichita.
All the culture capitals of the world.
But I remember thinking, like, gosh, what a failure that person is. But actually, if you can play those places, you know, it's not hard to sell out a theater in Chicago and San Francisco and Los Angeles.
Yeah, no kidding.
But because I noticed that with Bill Maher, a lot of the places he says he's going to. You know, I'll be in Oklahoma City, and I'll be – and I think, wow, good for you, you know, these fill-in seats in, in those venues.
And those are not his audiences if you're going off of his politics, I guess.
No, but there are enough people there to fill, you know, 2,000 seats. There's just not a nice hotel.
Yeah.
See, that's the difference.
Yeah, and I know that you don't like chit-chat with the concierge and the desk people and the bellman.
Oh, the problem is that it's just –
the small talk annoys you.
The problem is – that it's, I was somewhere, yesterday, I went to buy a toothbrush, an electric toothbrush, and I was in San Francisco, and I was at a Walgreens, and there was a woman there, and she was Korean. I'm guessing she was born in Korea, but had lived here for a long time. She hardly had an accent. And I said to her, I said, if I had any business, I would hire you away.
Really?
And every now and then you meet someone, and you think, I would take that person.
Yeah.
Whatever I had to pay them, because she had a real personality and a real spirit and was genuinely helpful and genuinely friendly. It came from somewhere inside of her, and it wasn't like, how's your morning going so far? It wasn't...
where are you flying in from?
Right. How was your flight? How was your flight in?
Exactly.
Where are you coming in from? So where are you off to? Is it business or pleasure? I hope you save some time for pleasure.
Yeah.
When I hear that, someone just becomes dead to me.
Yeah,
and I think, gosh, all the things you could say to somebody. I said to someone a while ago, I said, I'm sorry, but that's just a bad question. I said, why don't you ask, do you know anybody in a wheelchair? Right? And then I asked this woman, I said, do you know anybody in a wheelchair? She said, all the time I was growing up, my mother was in a wheelchair, and I had to be her servant and do everything. And then this woman went to college, and her mother had an operation, and then could walk again. And it wasn't like she could walk again with a cane in each hand. She walked again just like everybody else.
That's a real story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, before we go, I know that whenever you go to a new country when you're traveling around, you like to learn the local insults What are a few of your favorites?
Well, it's funny how that just kind of came about when I was on tour. I was in Amsterdam, and I learned that if someone cuts you off in traffic, if you're on your bike or whatever, you call them a cancer whore or a tuberculosis whore.
Wow. And then how do those two work together?
Well, I know it. I would never think to stitch the word cancer to whore.
Yeah.
But they do it there. In Denmark, you would say, why don't you run around in my ass? Right? After I wrote
Sounds
that
more
essay.
Like an invitation.
In Spain, you say, I shit in the breast milk of your whore mother. But the best is other Romanians, you know.
Yeah.
Shove your hand up my ass and jerk off my shit. I mean, that's poetry.
I think something gets lost in the translation for me. Well, once again, the book is called Calypso. David Sedaris, it's been such a pleasure. Thanks for chatting with me.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thanks again to David Sedaris for coming on the podcast. Order his wonderful book, Calypso, on Amazon or Audible. Catch his regular pieces in The New Yorker and on BBC Radio 4. And find more from David on his website at davidsedarisbooks.com. Support for today's show comes from Google Play. Did you know that you can now download and listen to audiobooks on Google Play? That's right, with hands-free listening using Google Assistant or Chromecast, you can enjoy thousands of titles a la carte, no subscription necessary. There's even multi-device integration across the Google ecosystem. And for a limited time, you get $10 off your first one by visiting g.co/play/kick. That's g.co/play/kick. Find your story with audiobooks on Google Play. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on iTunes and leave us a review. You can follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at Kick-Ass News Pod. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, and ideas at comments@kickassnews.com. I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.